Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 464.
Why am I doing that stupid voice, Katie? Why can't I just say, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 464? I feel like as I always start the podcast with the same, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. Matt's made fun of it before. So I was trying to have fun with it. I was just trying to mix it up a little bit. I was trying to mix it up for the listeners. I was trying to mix it up for my own brain. Katie, I was trying to mix it up for you because you've heard so many of these. I think you've heard more Nerdist podcasts than anyone else. Like, because sometimes you've had to listen to them a couple times to make sure that everything was all leveled and good and excellent for the listener.
I have to listen to them quite a few times.
God damn it. One of these days, maybe you should be a guest in the podcast. And we should dig around a little bit, like, what's KT Money up to? Where's she from? What's her deal? What are her aspirations?
Okay. Are you asking me right now?
Does she want a family? Does she hate families? What sandwiches does she like? What's her favorite Slurpee flavor?
White cherry.
Is she a beach person?
Beach person.
Okay, I didn't
Doesn't
say
even
the
matter
or.
What the second one is.
The orgasm planet.
Beach person.
Wow, okay. All right, good. I didn't even have to think about that one. At Midnight's back on the air. We just completed our first week. Thank you so much if you watched. The show it's my dream job, so I'm very, very, very excited to be back. We'll be back for a while, so please watch. It's Monday through Thursday after Colbert on Comedy Central at midnight. Our sponsor for this podcast, Katie, I'm very excited about. I don't believe they've sponsored a podcast before, but I love this company, which is Spec. They make cases. They make like phone cases, mobile device cases, and they were one of our first sponsors for Course of the Force. They made these really cool.
Yeah, those were great.
Course of the Force. They sort of look like the clone.
The stormtrooper
cases, and it I've met a lot of the Spec people. I've hung out with them at like CESs and stuff, and just like super nerdy dudes, just good people. So the candy shell is probably the case that you know from Spec, and they kind of have this "Long live the machines" mentality, which advocates for humans to protect, not fear, the machines. Listen, if the machines are going to overtake us anyway, we might as well just be cool with them so that they're not like, hey, I remember when you were a dick to me when I was just a non-sentient device. So I guess long live the machines. And by the way, Spec, if you go to specproducts.com, they'll give you can get cases for pretty much anything. It's a cool company. And they make great, great, great cases. So go over to Spec today and wrap that puppy, and by wrap I mean put a case, and by puppy I mean on your device before you put it in someone.
What? Can I not? Keep it safe.
Keep it safe.
Keep it safe.
And keep it on the beach for Katie Levine. Katie, the beach. You're a beach person. I like the beach. I like to look at the water. I don't like getting sand everywhere.
I surf, so.
Oh, yeah. That explains everything. Yep. You can't surf in a forest.
No. I do like hiking, though, too. I like the forest, too. I just like nature. Anything that has to do with nature.
Have you ever been to Costa Rica?
No, I want to.
What are you waiting for? It's fucking rainforest, ocean.
I know. I need to go.
You could like swing through the canopies and then just like jump onto a surfboard and just paddle your way out.
That sounds like heaven.
I think the west coast of Costa Rica is the one you want. When I went there, it was the west coast.
They're surfing on both, but yeah, the west coast I think has better surfing because I know people have done surf trips there.
Miss you, I'm going back home to the West Coast, Costa Rica. This episode of the podcast is Nick Kroll, who is a dear friend of ours. This is a three-peat. This is the third time Nick was on. The Kroll Show starts Tuesday, January 14th, and it is on Comedy Central for 11 weeks from there, I believe, at 10:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. So, Nick, I adore. I've done so many comedy shows with that guy and hung out with him a lot, and he's just such a sweetheart. A dude can say that about another dude, right? He's a sweetheart.
Yeah,
I just want to hug him every time I see him. And I'm one of the funniest people I know, so I greatly enjoyed chatting with Nick Kroll here on the Nerds Podcast, number 464. See, I got to bookend it with crazy voices.
I like it. It fits.
Do you matches. Like it better than the beach?
No.
No. Sometimes you're a real dick, Katie.
I know.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello, Nick Kroll.
No, that was too official of a start.
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Well, so let's just have a natural chat, and then at some point you'll introduce me.
What do you want to talk about?
Tiny Waters, mainly.
Tiny
Hold
waters,
me closer, tiny waters.
Wow.
Yeah,
you and I
out
on the road.
Yes, out on the road away from other people. Just out into the middle of the road where other people can't hear.
Here's one thing that I would talk about up top.
Okay, please.
I think I probably came in around the same time last year to talk to you guys,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking. I was saying that I thought that Justin Bieber would have a meltdown within like a pretty short amount of time, and like a week later he peed in a mop bucket.
So are you Bieber psychic?
Yeah, I think I'm a little Bieber psychic.
Well, yeah. And then after that is when he did the Anne Frank thing, right?
Yeah.
And then also this past year, he
Brazilian whorehouse
got carried up the Great Wall of China,
yes. Threw up on stage,
yeah.
Got a bottle thrown at him. That's not him, but he brought that.
Yeah, he punched a paparazzi, or you know, so
it must have been cute.
I have to say, I still think the meltdown has not happened yet. I think these are just
like tremors.
Well, didn't he quit? Didn't he say he retired?
No, really?
He said he retired. He said he was going to retire from music. But I mean, he's not going
to
retire
to focus on arm tattoos.
To focus on Usher.
Yeah. To focus on his real love, macrame.
His manager, Scooter Braun, is engaged.
Isn't that one of Hitler's?
Sounds like that was one his of his trusty Hitler's sidekick.
In a manner of speaking,
Scooter,
yes.
Braun.
Yeah.
What should we do about these problems?
Yeah.
Scooter Braun, I am concocting the perfect Aryan child.
He is. He is beautiful.
He will gestate for a period of 52 years, yeah.
The beanie on his hat was a swastika.
Is that
yeah,
what it was?
The little propeller, it was just in the shape of a swastika.
Well, I'm glad we all now have blown the lid off this.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, have we started? I'm sorry. Usually I'm not the one who says that. Other people.
Have we started yet?
Oh, that's
started?
So good. Yeah. Can we swear on this?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can say whatever.
Great.
You're a three-peater to the Nerdist podcast. You were on the first year of the podcast, and then you were on last year, and now you've come back. And so it's nice to I imagine that the podcast appearances have really helped elevate your career to places that you never had dreamed possible from being on a podcast.
You know, that is literally why I'm here.
Oh, by the way, in all seriousness, though, I thought you were really great on the James Franco roast.
Oh, thank you.
Which I haven't watched a roast in really ever and been like, oh man, that was great. I mean, I know like the. I remember the old Dean Martin roasts I thought were great, and then I watched them again. I was like, oh, these are not that great.
Oh, interesting.
Everyone's drunk.
Yeah, everyone's drunk, and it's really just super racist, and it's not really...
Yeah.
And even some of the more recent ones always felt kind of awkward and like, oh, I think those people really got stung. But this one actually was great. It was really fun and funny, and I thought you guys... I thought you did a great job.
Thank you. By the way, we're talking to Nick Kroll.
I'm sorry, who?
That'll all be sussed out in the intro.
Yeah. And also I'm realizing it's like, it always happens in podcasts where it's like, oh, we even introduced you. It's Nick Kroll. And then you're like, oh, like the people reading the like description of a podcast aren't looking to see the other name that is.
I tag intros on all of them. And that's where there's like a little bit of a sponsorship read. And I go, this podcast was Nick Kroll. It's the third time he's been on.
Okay. You know, and do you do like an Alec Baldwin, like, here's the thing where he's like, Nick Kroll came up in the New York comedy scene in the early 2000s.
Like it's a docuseries?
Yeah, and it's like Blue Train. It's like Coltrane is playing in the background.
Starting in the alternative comedy scene led him to L.A. where he began in Caveman.
Hang on, my daughter's texting me. Yeah. What a cunt. What a...
I'm not saying she is. I'm saying he would say that. Yeah, I was doing the character that would say that.
Guys,
I wasn't saying
take
that.
Take it easy on Chris, okay? He's doing an act out.
I'm fine.
Act out.
I'm fine.
Jesus Christ.
Am I flinching?
That reminded me of that that old BJ Novak joke, which was, I just met Yakov Smirnoff's wife. Ugh, what a cunt.
That's a funny joke.
It's so specific. The different pieces of information you would have to have.
Yes, that...
Yeah,
yeah.
Put it all together.
I love that. I love it.
The Franco roast. So, it was. I have felt similarly. Like I went to the. I remember going to the Charlie Sheen roast. I went and saw it, and I was like, "Ooh, this is a really negative vibe. This is like a real bad vibe to this whole thing. Like it's like a NASCAR. It's like watching NASCAR.
That's what I was gonna say it's like a truck pull or something.
People want to watch like crashes. And it was, you know, and at the moment, like, whatever you say about Sheen, he was fascinating in the country. But largely, roasts had become, like, people who are, like, were relevant and no longer were. And this was an opportunity for them to re-enter the public consciousness. And then very funny people decimating them.
And then without even really knowing them.
Yeah. And, like, look, Jeselnik and Amy and Whitney and, like, are super funny, great joke writers and performers. So it was fun to watch The Equation. But it was a different thing than what I think we all quote unquote remember from the Dean Martin roast, which was like, oh, these guys are all buddies and like, let's watch them be racist and homophobic.
Yeah.
But it still was, there was a camaraderie there that was kind of fun. And so when they said Franco about the Franco roast, it was like, oh, that would be, if I were to ever do a roast, this would be the one, just because it was, especially when they announced that Seth was going to be the MC, and that it was like, oh, well, Rogan's such a good guy, and the tone that he will set, I think, will be kind of fun. And so, you know, he was like, they'd reached out to be like, do you want to do it? And I was like, I think I do. Like, I think I wanted to do this one that would be kind of like, everyone felt relevant. I knew everyone except for James. He was the only guy I didn't know. And so Rogan, I was like, would you mind introducing us like over email and just so I can have some contact with him? So we emailed, Rogan put us in touch over email, and I emailed him and I was like, hey, do you want to get together for coffee? And he's like, I'm in Montreal, but if you want to call, like talk to me, we can talk on the phone. And I was like, okay. So he was like, this is my assistant's phone number. I was like, oh, okay. All right. Okay, fair enough. No, fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough. I'm not going to. Okay. So I call and we get on the phone, and then I'm all of a sudden like, wait, what am I going to talk to him about? Like, hey, you know, so I guess 3 days from now I'm going to do everything in my power to decimate you. What's going on? What are you doing in Montreal? So, and
what's your weaknesses?
Yeah. So he was.
Where's the tenderest meat?
Yeah. So he was like, he was very nice, but very quiet on the phone, which I think now. Well, so I'm talking to him for like a minute, and I'm like, "How's Montreal?" He's like, "It's good." I'm like, oh, "I love Montreal." So he's like, "Yeah." I'm like, yeah, it's a cool city. And he was like, okay, cool. And
so
I'm like,
basically, he's just waiting for you to get to the point, right?
I guess so. And so I'm like, so I don't know why I wanted to talk to you. And he's like, I was like, so, you know, did they approach you about it? Did you approach them? And he was like, they called me. He's like, I've never seen a roast. And he was like, pretty stupid of me to do this, huh? And I was like, no, it's in line with your adventurous spirit, which is true. Like, he is kind of like try anything kind of guy, which I really respect. But then but I wanted to be like, now looking back, I'm like, yeah, like Franco can do whatever he wants because he's fucking beautiful. Like, like the wildly handsome have a very different take on the world. Like the world is working for them.
Yeah.
And for good reason. Like he's a very handsome, very smart, very hardworking, very committed guy. But you know, looking back, I'm like, yeah, he was like, oh, so I'm going to go to a roast and they're going to be like, oh, you're so good looking. Oh, what a drag. Oh, you do all the things that you want to do.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, that's like when they roasted Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
And everyone seemed too afraid to really take shots. So a lot of it was like, hey, Frank's fucked like 10 girls this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't like, you, buddy? Didn't yeah. you,
what
buddy?
A dig.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I wonder, tell me, so just, we can get back to the Franco phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Francophile, Montreal. Yeah. Yes. Oh my God,
it's all coming together.
So you look at someone like James Franco, and I think nonstop about comedy and what makes comedy work, and why some comics work, why some other comics don't work. And I know he's not a comedian, but he is essentially in a position where he has to be funny.
Yeah,
and so I always think, you know, could a guy like Franco work with Louis's act?
Right.
I mean, obviously, some of the nuts and bolts would have to change, but part of what can make a comic, I think, is that they're not threatening to the audience in any way.
Right.
And when Franco walks out, he's immediately kind of threatening because people are like, well, fuck that guy. He doesn't have any problems. Right. I mean, obviously, yeah. he's a person, so
sure.
he does.
Sure.
But as a collective audience, people are immediately a little defensive because they think, like, oh, he has way more than I have.
Right, yeah. Right. I think, you know, and maybe that's why who knows? I mean, he's tried a bunch of stuff. Maybe that's why he doesn't necessarily do stand-up per se. But I think the key is, like, is that he's proven over and over that he has a sense of humor about himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At whatever it is, whether it's like, you know, being on General Hospital as a character named Franco, people are like, oh, what is he gonna do? And I was like, that's fucking cool. Like, yeah. That's like, he's not taking himself seriously at all. Like, the people who I'm like, could never do comedy are like musicians who can't, like, well, that's not true because a bunch of musicians want to do comedy, I think, but like, people who take themselves, like, he's a fascinating one because, like, actors are so unironic that they, you know, if they got up to do stand-up, a lot of them would be like, here's what's really going on, you know? And you're like, it's like why Russell Crowe's, like, going to go do the Bill Hicks movie.
Yeah.
Because he's like, yeah, Bill Hicks was saying what was going on, and he was earnest.
Yeah, it wasn't about comedy.
Yeah. And you're like, oh.
Actually, I think Jim Varney was earnest. I'm sorry. I was not worth stopping the momentum for that joke. It really was not worth it.
I don't know. My problem is I don't know who it is.
Ernest.
Oh.
Played by Jim Varney.
Well, I love that I just said the name louder and you're like,
Ernest. Yeah. But,
Ernest.
Oh, okay. Vern.
Vern.
You know what I mean?
Again.
Wait, so Ernest's best friend was named Vern?
Yeah. Well, see, I tend to think that Vern was just a psychological extension of Ernest.
He basically had
a split personality.
Oh, gotcha.
Vernest.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he was talking to himself, like poking out of a shower, talking to himself.
Yeah, basically, I think that the real character, I think Vern is the real guy, and Ernest is this weird projection, this mental projection of like, hey, why can't you open up and be more fun? And Vern was always shutting windows on him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's true. And also the idea that Ernest is dead because he wears the same thing every time see him. That's what he was wearing when he died.
So maybe Vern, or that's the other way, is that Vern is real and Ernest is like the ghost.
Yeah. No, that's what we're saying. Yeah, that's what we're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But then Ernest is either a ghost or a mental projection of Vern.
Guys, I'm getting scared stupid here.
We should go to camp.
Yeah. Ernest goes to purgatory.
Yeah. Which he big
or he's in.
He might be.
Was he a comedian? Was that an act?
Yeah, I mean he was an actor and and they were local commercials. They were like really regional commercials.
Your area?
In the Midwest and the South.
Okay.
It was for. Well, it might have actually been more.
And was
local
it like
that.
It was 7-Up or Sprite that were the big commercials he did?
No. He did like there was like a car commercial, I think. Like you know, oh, there's some great deals down here at this Ford lot. And then it sort of blew up in the region, and then it kind of went national. And then he, like, that character was sort of like, you know, it was like Pee Wee Herman or any other character that sort of became bigger than the thing that they were doing. And it just became this kind of cultural
Not stigma.
No, cultural staple. Like, just basically this, you know.
I remember it. I think my first, I feel like, was like a, like, hey, Vern. And it was like a, for like a 7-Up or something.
Yeah, it was, it was actually pretty far before that, but it was the guy who was the annoying neighbor, and he would always, like, mm-hmm. you know, he'd prop a ladder up on his neighbor's window and be like, hey, Vern, you gonna go down? And then Vern would close the window on his hands. Wow. So.
What, is he still alive?
No, Jim Varney died. He died of lung cancer. Yeah.
Yeah, he was an avid smoker.
An avid smoker.
Yeah, yeah, real big fan of it.
Apparently.
Some guys like comic books.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy loved fucking cancer.
Yeah, yeah. No, he loved smoking, but cancer was like the trophy that he got from smoking so much.
That, yeah, that's so crazy. That's like Larry the Cable Guy, where it just became bigger than whoever that guy is.
Because he was a comic.
Like something, yeah. Whitney?
Dan?
It was a, yeah, Dan Whitney? Dan, it was a character he was doing, and then it just kept.
He was just like a regular stand-up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it just, and I always wonder, because I don't see you do a lot of stand-up as you, Nick. I've seen you do some stand-up as Nick, but I've also seen you do Fabrice mm-hmm. and other characters. And so I wonder, do you like that? Would you like a character to be bigger than you as a person? Do you like that? Do you think it's good to have the separation?
I used to do a lot more characters live. And I think, you know, obviously having my show has allowed me to do all those characters and feel fulfilled by them. But I also, at some point, did make a conscious decision that I wanted people – I wanted Nick Kroll to be like the guy who did all of these characters that I could like go to. But also I found, especially going on the road, I didn't want to be relying on doing a character, because like if – like in other – And although that was, I think, like the comedy world, I think, or fans of comedy have become so much more literate over the last like 6 years, even just mm-hmm. from podcasts, honestly, like that you can go anywhere and be like, they'll be like, oh, that's that character that I heard on the podcast, versus like, all right, like you've just seen two comics and now a gentleman in a thong with four pairs of sunglasses is going to talk about Raven Simone. Yeah. You know, it's like,
you know what though? That sounds a lot like the, like right before the comedy boom, late 70s, early 80s, when people would
turn around
and pack into comedy clubs mm-hmm. and then there were so many comedians and some guys would just come out and do these crazy ridiculous characters mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. without really explaining it at all, and people were on board.
Yes, yeah. Because I think because it was there was enough comedy going around, and I think there's enough now, but I also just was like, I didn't ever want to be tied to one character. So it felt like, oh, if I am the center of them and then I can go and do all these different things. I do find like building characters that it's useful to perform them live because you can see where the laughs are.
Yeah.
But I think podcasts in a way have also kind of made that not irrelevant, but have been like, you know, I'll go and do like Comedy Bang Bang or something as a character, and then you can sort of see what people have responded to and be like, oh, that worked, or messing around with them live versus just going straight to filming.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Going back a little bit, was everyone okay after the roast, or were there any hurt feelings?
You know, there were largely everyone was okay.
Franco didn't stick around. I remember he left right away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I saw Jonah was on the red carpet doing all the interviews beforehand. So right.
Which the both of you have done.
Before. Yes, yeah, yeah. I did it for the Joan Rivers roast.
I did it for Saget.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it was a weird thing because I was talking to you and I was like so nervous. I was.
Yeah, you're kind of.
I was not. I did not. I am very glad that I was a part of that experience. But I did not have fun. I was incredibly nervous about performing, and I was somewhat nervous about what people were going to say about me or what people weren't going to say about me. Like, and I think I said this to you, but it was like this almost scarier than what people were going to say was to just be ignored.
Right.
And because there is like there's a real, especially with that roast where everybody was relevant, there was a real like fame ladder. Of like who's really famous, who's and like in and I didn't mind like Natasha made a joke of like Nick Kroll, you're one fan out there, and like which I was like great, you know what I mean, and like Franco called me a rat face, and I was like great, like the jokes didn't hurt my feelings at all, like I didn't mind them, but almost scarier was like being like ignored and being like I'm not as famous or successful as these people, like they're movie stars up here, and I'm like scrapping to be a part of it, which is true.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's like, that was I think the scariest was like the reality of something like that. In the end, it was totally fine, but. Actually, going back to the character thing, was originally I was like, ooh, maybe I'll do a character because I'll feel more free to just really lay into people. Like, because I did an one of the first, only roasts I ever did before that was like, I think Paul F. Tompkins did a roast at UCB, and I did Fabrice on that roast. And it was like, it was at UCB. It was like Amy Mann and Jimmy Pardo and Patton, and it was really fun because I just was Fabrice and I could be as vicious as I wanted to be and like have that rhythm, and you can hide behind a character, and I was like, for this roast I was like, no, I don't think, I feel like that'll be cheating if I'm like everyone else would be make, not realizing like that I could be myself, go backstage, change, become a character and come back, and like Hader, yeah. Hader did it and was obviously so funny, but Hader is not a stand-up at all. He's not a guy who is like Bill Hader on stage a ton, but was so funny and was able to do, and I was like, and like Andy Samberg did like a bit, you know, like a more of a bit, which I thought was really funny too. I mean, that to me was the fun thing about that roast is everybody did well. Like, everybody killed. Everybody had their own take and their own style.
Yeah, even
to it.
Jonah's was like the bailing. It's like, why am I saying these things? You guys are my friend. And then saying something horrible. Yeah. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're my friends.
Yeah. And like, Natasha was super funny, and Sarah was super funny, and Ross, you know, Jeff Ross, who's like, that's his bread and butter, like, came up and showed why he is the fucking roast master. Yeah. Like, he had great jokes. So it was. But just to finish the Franco thing, so the phone call, and he was like, I got to watch a roast. He's like, I haven't watched any. Do you have any to recommend? And I was like, oh my God, look, what the fuck am I doing? So I was like, you know, you could watch the old Dean Martin roast, which I think is the vibe they're going for with ours or with yours. Or you could watch like the Pam Anderson roast if you want to see what the modern like monster version of this is.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, cool. And then we get off the phone, and I saw Rogan the next day, and I was like, I spoke to Franco yesterday. I was like, it was the most awkward conversation I've ever, no, I saw him like the night of the roast. I was like, that was like the most awkward conversation I've ever had on the phone. Rogan's like, we've been friends for 10 years. I don't think I've ever spoken to him on the phone. So whereas it felt to me like a power play, I think he's just not a guy you talk on the phone to.
Yeah.
And then we did it, and it was like, I went home and like was like, that was terrible. Like, I felt terrible about myself that night. And my friends were like, my friend was like, I think you have like just body dysmorphia here. Like, that, you were great. Like, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I watched, I was like, oh, that was fine.
Yeah.
But it just was this weird, I can't explain it. It's like, it's such a weird negative, not a negative vibe, because we all are like friendly and respect each other, you know?
But you're exposed in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
You're vulnerable in the sense that people could say stuff that you're really actually insecure about.
Sure.
But you should be okay with it because you're up there and it's all just the name of the game.
Yeah.
You're also exposed in the sense that if you're not funny, everyone's going to be like, that guy's not fucking funny. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
You know? And then it's going to be the thing that everyone talks about the next day. Is like, oh, old Kroll bombed on the old road.
The next situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, and on top of that, because it was Franco and because it was all of those folks up there, it felt like this was one that people were going to watch. Like that, like our world of people who you would want to watch and respect you are going to watch this one. They're going to like tune in, like you watch this one, like, or, you know, like you wouldn't necessarily, I don't know if you watched like whatever the one was last year. I don't even remember who it was, but like there was something about like our community was going to watch it, and I didn't want to fuck up for our community. And like, you know, a couple weeks later, I was somewhere, and I'm going to name drop here. Like, I met P.T. Anderson and Adam Sandler, who had both watched the roast, and were like, "Hey, good job, man!" And I was like, "Cool."
Yeah, it was cool. It was fun. I was comfortable the whole time.
Because you don't want to hear, "Hey, I saw the roast. Look, man, those things are hard."
Yeah, exactly. Or just even just like, "Hey, I saw the roast. So what are you up to now?"
Yeah.
Because I keep thinking about, that was the first one I watched where I go, maybe I would do one of these, although I probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
But now that I'm in a position where it's likely that Comedy Central might ask me to do
one
at some point, I still can't. You know, that you do that thing when you're a performer, when you're watching other people, and you're like, would I have said that?
Yes.
Would I have a different joke? What would I do if, like, you can't help but put yourself in this situation? And I honestly,
you'd be good at it.
I don't think I don't know if I would.
Your mean jokes are good.
No, I don't like being mean.
It's a weird thing. It's a really weird thing, because you are like, we all are mean, or we can be mean, but also, like, I think in general, honestly, like comedians, for at least from my experience, our community is actually a very largely supportive, decent, nice group of people. Like the whole like idea of like mean, like truly mean stuff, like I guess we're all capable of it. We're all monsters inside. but I do think like inherently it's not our community to do that, really, towards, I don't know. Like, I don't like talking about other comedians. I will never publicly, like talk badly about other comedians.
Like, for instance, who would you not talk bad? I'm kidding.
Like, I don't know. Like, a Jonah Ray type.
Right,
example.
Right, right.
Here we go. I fucking knew it.
I kind of feel like that I would have two approaches from the receiving end if I were just on a dais and I knew that shit was coming. That I would either have to try to make as comprehensive a list of as possible of like, here's all the things that they're probably going to go after, and just go, okay.
Yeah.
Or I would have to go in and say, I'm just going to have to let all of it go and whatever it is, you know, this is just what they do. And then just not take it that you just can't. Yeah.
You try to prep for it. And like, it was fun and interesting going out like that. It was the funnest part of it was going out that week before and like, Aziz and Natasha and Jeff and Sarah, we were all running sets around town. And like, you know, Aziz and I were like, you know, we've been doing stand-up together, comedy together for like 10 years. So like, it was fun to be out with him and be like, and also being like, I heard that so-and-so's going to do a joke about your, you know, like, and like Aziz does, he's methodically effective and efficient at being like, oh, they're going to make fun of the fact that like I said I was friends with Kanye. Well, I'll go write a joke in anticipation of that. And he was very effective at that. And, you know, but you are anticipating what's going to come and to be like, all right, am I going to have a joke ready for that or not? It's a super weird process.
Or just all of a sudden just feel an arrow go thump, like, oh, I didn't know that note was exposed. Yeah. I thought I was all covered up.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that.
Oh, how
well, Sarah talked afterwards about how she was bummed that people talked about her age. And you know, and it was like, God, I didn't even think that would be something like she's got such a good sense of humor about herself. But you don't know, you know what I mean? I don't think she knew that would hurt her.
That's a good point.
Which,
yeah,
you know, I think that to me just says that they don't know her and that's not something anything about who she is.
Right.
That's just the thing that's like, oh, what are the most surface things we can talk about?
Right. And that's the thing is like certain jokes just became the jokes that it was like, you know.
Gay jokes.
Yeah. Or like, like Franco's gay or Sarah's older or Natasha's not famous or Nick looks like a rat face. it was interesting because it was like I had a joke that got cut about Sarah being older, but it was like, well, it's a joke about her. She's not old. She's like a beautiful, super like hip, like youthful person. It's just that I've known about her for many years because she was on Saturday Night Live like 18, 19 years ago, however long ago. Like, you know, like I've just, but she's not in any way. Like, I don't think of her as old at all.
No. Right.
Which is one of the reasons you would make that joke. But like, you know, we all have our sensitivities. You know what I mean? That are have good basis or no basis.
Yeah. I think I almost wonder if it would be a good exercise or a bad, like, I hope for Sarah's sake that afterwards she's not like, I never thought of that before and now is obsessed about that thing. If I were ever to do it, I would sort of say like, you know, whatever shots I take, hopefully when I come out of it, I'll be like, hey, I survived that and it wasn't such a big deal. So maybe I don't need to be as insecure about all this dumb shit anymore.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like I was talking to someone about it the other day of like, if you said the things that you say to yourself about other people, you'd be like, you're a fucking monster.
Yeah. Oh my God. I started laughing because that's funny. And at the same time, that's a very poignant thing that you just said, because I think particularly, I mean, most people are shitty to themselves.
Yeah.
But particularly people who do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very symbiotic relationship between this profession attracts people who are predisposed to be a little emotionally broken.
Mm-hmm.
And then the structure of the thing itself makes that worse.
Sure.
Yeah, it doesn't help it.
But it's also, I also think to become successful, you have to be highly self-critical. Because you have to be improving yourself. So you're going to be like, no, that wasn't good. Like, I didn't fucking nail that. Like, that set wasn't great. Like, versus, like, guys like, hey, fucking got some laughs there. All right. Like,
three laughs.
Yeah, that guy's plateauing.
He is, but the fucking got some laughs guy is probably not going home sad.
Right.
You know, which is totally fine, but
he's getting laid. He's getting spots occasionally, but he ain't getting a TV show.
He's not getting a TV show. That's fine. No, you're right. I definitely think there is a difference between self-criticism and flagellation.
Yes.
Because, you know, I say this to people, something had, you know, just in responding with people online about this podcast or anything that I work on or anything that we work on. And, you know, what happens a lot of times is someone will say something really shitty, like in a really mean way, and I'll go, hey, you know, you didn't have to say that way. I go, you can't take criticism. Like, no.
Yeah.
If you have constructive criticism, when people actually say, hey, look, I don't mean this as an attack, but just for me as someone who listens to your stuff, I think maybe you could work on doing this or try this. Or this is my impression of this. And I always go, oh, my God, that is very insightful and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Now go fuck yourself.
And they'll go, I thought you didn't like criticism. I'm like, no, criticism is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But beating someone in the face is, I think in some people's minds they think, oh, that's criticism. No, that's just being shitty.
Right.
And that's what we do to ourselves.
Right.
And so that's why I think you have to be careful between being self-critical and just like, you're so fucking stupid. Why did you think you could, as opposed to, that didn't go as well. How can you make this better?
Right. But I think it's a constant marriage of the two. But in a way, like, we have like some of our worst internet commenters in our own head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know
absolutely.
What I mean? It's like, because you can show a picture, like, you know, you're like, oh my God, you look great in that picture. You're like, I look like a fucking idiot. You know what I mean? Look at my fucking double chin and I'm a piece of fat fucking shit, you know? And then they're like, no, you look great. And then, like, you're like, I love this picture of you. And you're like, that person's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, that one. Look at that.
I'm a nightmare. I'm a human nightmare.
I think we all have to, I think it would be better if we allowed ourselves the ability to recognize that there is a disparity between what we see because we are with ourselves every second of the day and what other people see. Other people's brains cannot process everything we are at once.
Yeah.
So they're not going to see every detail that you're like, oh, this is weird, or my ears are this, or my chin is that, or I can't. People aren't taking that all in. They just look at you really quick and go, oh, that's Nick. Hey, there's Jonah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sometimes will look, if I see a picture of a paparazzi picture of a celebrity that's, you know, generally really good looking, and I'll look at it for a little bit and go, I wonder if they think that their face looks wide.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah, they do.
I wonder if they're like weirded out about this part of their neck.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
They all have their things.
Oof. Everybody does. It's wild. It's really wild. So to just, as we continue to talk, because I think it's interesting stuff, but the end of the Franco thing is like, and then about the middle of the roast near the end, I was like, how are you holding up to him in like a commercial break? Because like they would break for commercial, we'd all like, I was taking shots with Rogan. Like, I was like, I'm getting drunk and this is crazy. But I went up to James. I was like, how's it going? He's like, oh, this is great. He's like, I never watched the roast, so I didn't know that everyone made fun of each other. I thought you guys were just going to make fun of me for 2 hours.
Oh.
So he was like, I think I'm getting off easy.
As you guys who all knew each other were attacking each other.
Yeah,
like,
He's just
James
above
Franco's
the fight.
James Franco's too pretty for words.
Yeah. That was like also an interesting lesson of like, oh, it is also about expectation of like, what if you're expecting the worst, then if it, you know, everybody tears each other apart and leaves you slightly alone, you're like, oh, that was great.
Did you think about how you were going to react when people made fun of you? Because Aziz went with the slapping.
Hand slapping.
The hand
which
slapping.
Is what he does. But yes, it was interesting to like, you are aware. I mean, that was the other thing. And I think we've all been in those situations. Like, you have to do something for the first time. You have to do everything for the first time once. So, like, for me, part of what was disconcerting about it was, like, reading a teleprompter and being like, am I looking at the camera? Is the teleprompter the camera right now? Or am I pretending to look at the audience? And like, I can see on the corner of the monitor now that they're cutting to me for a reaction. Yeah. Am I reacting? You know, there are all those – there's so many things that you're trying to process at once that it's like – and versus, like, you know, like – Seth or Jonah, who have like done the Golden Globes or the Oscars and are used to being in a theater of people reading a teleprompter, you know, like, yeah. And I'm just like, I don't know how this fucking works. I don't know how to do this really. But I tried to react as genuinely as possible and just laugh.
It's so funny to hear you describe it because it sounds like what it's like to shoot a porn or a sex scene.
Yeah.
When you're an audience member, oh, hey, they're probably having fun there. But at the time, yeah, move this over here. This has got to be this. It's like hearing all the mechanics of it. To basically create what you know what is this seamless comedy experience?
Yeah, I've shot not a ton of like make out or like sexy stuff.
Yeah.
And I like that's what I like to call it.
Sexy stuff. Does the script have any sexy stuff?
I've probably gotten like 1.5 hard-ons shooting like make out.
Now is that a hard-on and a half of one, or if you added up like the little
like
percentages of hard-ons?
How many chubs does make a hard-on?
I've gotten like let's say one full hard on, and then like two or three half chubs.
Was the other person aware that there was a?
Generally, no. I mean, that's the thing is like you're not like it's so. I mean, maybe once or twice. I mean, there's that famous like who I don't know who was quote of like they're about to do a sex scene. I can't remember who it's attributed to. Like Brando or something like that. And he's like, I'm sorry for what's about to happen or for what is not about to happen.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Because it's generally frowned upon to look at an actress and go, did your pussy get wet? Like, you're not supposed to do that.
You're not?
I was talking to a girl
especially
once.
If you're a host and you don't act in things.
I was talking to a girl once. It was about, she was like a day player on some show and she was going to have to make out with the lead guy. And the guy comes into her dressing room. He's like, hey, peppermint or cinnamon? She's like, excuse me? Peppermint or cinnamon, what do you want me to taste like?
Yeah, I'm so conscious of trying not to make the woman feel awkward or like I'm so conscious of like, let's make this comfortable and fun and like that the last thing on my mind generally is like, oh, we're about to fucking do this.
Yeah, exactly. Want it to look real.
Yeah, well, I just, Tootsie,
you
know that thing, and it's like, are you ready, my dear?
God damn it. That movie holds up.
Yeah.
110. Bill Murray?
So good. Improvised all his lines.
I know. We just did a live reading of that, and it was... It's so good. It was. I rewatched it, and it's great, and it really holds up too on the page.
Where did you do a reading of that?
At LACMA, Jason Reitman generally does them. He does a bunch of live readings of classic movies, and then David Wayne did this one. Like Reitman's away, so Wayne did one, and I think Patton did one. Wayne's favorite movie is Tootsie, and so he did a live reading of it, and I got to do Dustin Hoffman. I got to read that part. Wow. And it was one of the most fun things that I've ever done.
I miss Dorothy. She's
right here.
She's right here.
Yeah. It's so crazy. And I heard making that movie that they hated each other. Sidney Pollack and Dustin Hoffman were like clashing constantly.
Really?
And it was just such an interesting example because in my mind it's like, oh, the best art comes out of when everybody's like collaborating and loving each other and it's like, no, that movie was a nightmare for them to make.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I think it's like, I don't know, if, you know, someone, you guys can Google it at home. Don't press pause. Listen to the whole thing and then go back.
But, make a note. Make a mental
make
note.
Make a note to go Google Sidney Pollack, Dustin Hoffman, beef? ?
Yeah, yeah.
Someone made a Dustin Hoffman, Sidney Poitier.
I like that.
Never mind. I've already fucked it up.
No.
But what was it going to be?
Yeah, it was going to be a food
like
joke.
A piece
beef.
Of meat?
Yeah, like yeah, a piece yeah, of yeah. meat, a sandwich at a Tootsie-themed cafe somewhere. Just a very specific information.
This is a bit that was pitched a long time ago. I think it was a Mulaney idea. We pitched a bunch of sketches to Chappelle's show, like, you know, when they would take submissions, and the sketch was called Poitier's Complaint, and it was just like, but it was like really petty complaints from Poitier, just like, yes, listen to me, man. This dry cleaning is not starched enough, man. Shockingly, they didn't buy it.
With the gravity of his
yes,
voice.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't work.
I like the toast crusty on the outside, man.
You listen to me, mama. These waters are too tiny.
This change machine took my dollar.
Still alive, Sydney.
He is.
Yeah.
We're good.
Director of Ghost Dad.
Really?
Bill Cosby.
Are you really? Serious?
Yeah.
Good for him.
You ghost listen dad. To me, Ghost Dad.
Now you're Ghost Dad, see?
I can see right through you.
These are not peanut M&Ms, mama.
That almost sounds like Bono in Bullet the Blue Sky. The God I believe in isn't short of cash, mister.
Who are you angry at? Who are you talking?
Is this Bono or?
Bono.
The singer?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you
or
too.
Or Bono, the singer.
Was he in a movie Bono. Or is this a song?
It's a song called Bullet the Blue Sky from on Rattle and Hum.
Ah.
And it's just, he's having this, you know, he was sort of it was the period of his music where it was like, he was really kind of like critical of capitalism.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was just this, you know, God, I believe it isn't short of cash. But he was talking about televangelists, I guess.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's kind of cool. Like, at the end of it all, like, he's, like, there's something you're like, oh, you're against capitalism? Whether you're like crazy.
I don't mind Bono at all. And although I loved the South Park episode with Bono, oh,
I haven't seen that one.
I don't want to spoil it, but yeah. You should watch it.
Of course.
And they basically essentially just said the worst thing that you one of the worst ways that you can depict a person,
uh-huh.
and it was still hilarious. But I was still like, "What's everyone's Bono like? He's what's wrong with
he's
Bono?
Doing his thing.
He has
of all of those kinds of people, he has like done. He has made a real impact on the world, and I think in a real way with like the work in Africa. Like in a real way, you're like, oh, you're not just like
he's not just talk.
Yeah, like save the it's like dogs need saving, you know." You're like, it's
so I
true.
Put on this ribbon.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
we're raising money for these dogs. And you're like, what about like the thousands and millions of homeless people in this country? Like, well, they're not
cuddly.
Yeah.
You can't adopt one of those.
Yeah. So.
So Kroll's show is back in a couple days.
January 14th. It's every Tuesday at 10:30. So I don't know when this airs.
This is going up tomorrow.
Great.
So it's in advance of
the premiere. Oh, great, great. Yeah. So yeah, it's
drum up some excitement.
Yeah. So it's every Tuesday at 10:30, and it's I'm really excited for it. I'm really excited for.
Is this season three?
Season two.
Season two.
Season two.
You guys started writing this a year ago.
It started airing a year ago, like similar, like January 19th or something, and we were writing season two when it premiered.
That's right.
And then we started shooting and finished shooting in like June, and we've been done, wrapped, in like October.
So this will be like watching someone else's show at this point.
Yeah. It is. It's kind of fun. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever had that where you like, you know, I guess like Midnight is like, it's, you shoot it and it's back and it's that
night. I get that with cartoons. I do voices and you don't see the cartoon for like a 9 months or a year. You're like, oh, I totally forgot.
Yeah. And that's how it feels. Like it's kind of crazy because I put the show away, you know, you watch each episode like 100 times as you're editing it and tightening it up and stuff like that, and then you put it away, and now I'm like rewatching stuff as I'm like, you know, getting ready to talk about the show and stuff like that, and I'm like, oh god, I forgot all about all it's really fun.
That's
you
cool.
can sort of begin to enjoy it, and it's sort of like we were talking about of like, you look at yourself like, I need to watch my, when I edit my stuff, like I need to watch it at least two times to before I can give any notes, because the first time all I'm doing is being like, look at your fat fucking face.
Oh,
cut
no.
this out, I look fat.
Yeah. And I try not to cut anything where I'm like, I don't look good, but like the first time I watch something, I'm just watching myself. I'm not watching.
Funny is that you give yourself a pass to be like, all right, here's where I'm going to not be focusing on anything relevant.
Right.
Yeah. But I at least just have to get this out of my system.
I get one out of my system, and then I can watch and be like, cut this, cut that. Cut everybody else's lines. Leave my jokes. Nobody else can score.
Push the image in.
But then also cut my face out of it because I don't like it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
Nick,
yeah.
There's no one left in the show.
I know. That's just right. Air the black.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. It's perfect.
AV Club's
perfect.
Going crazy for this one.
No, I think I'm actually. I'm harder on myself on jokes of my own than I am on other people sometimes, where I'll be like cut my joke, you know what I mean? And like, because it's, you know, every bit is like me and John Daly, me and Jenny Slate, me and John Mulaney, me and Chelsea Peretti, me and, you know, I generally have another like a partner in me and Jason Manzoukas. And then there are other pieces, but like in general, it's been like me partnering up with one of my good friends. And I'm usually like, cut my joke here. Like Mulaney's joke's better. Or like, you know, I like Daly's take on this or whatever, you know,
that's for the better of the sketch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is. I think I'm okay at being like, my joke's not as good here, you know, or
is there someone there to say like, no, your joke is better.
Yeah. And then it's all ends up being all my jokes. No. I luckily have like, you know, Jonathan Kreisel, who directed the show, and then John Levenstein, who's the showrunner. And then our editors are Dan Longino and Bill Benz. And I very much like tried to have a conversation with them about it. Like very rare. Yeah. There's been one or two times where I'm like, no, I want this. Like this is where I'm putting my foot down and I want this. And I know you don't agree with me, but it's my name. So I'm going to.
Yeah. As long as you don't do it all the time.
No, I do it very, very sparingly. Because for the most part, it's like, no, you've hired these people to be your partners. Like, or, you know, there's a reason for that. Like there's,
yeah.
And if you can release that element of it, then your job and life becomes so much easier that it's not all on you to make every decision good and bad.
Oh, I agree. And I also feel like, yeah, there's a, you know, a lot of people are funnier than I am. and I'm totally fine with that. And I just only, you know, as long as the best overall thing gets made,
yeah.
I kind of don't care who says,
yeah,
who has the thing, as long as the thing gets
whatever
out there.
Services the bit or the comedy of the moment or the bit.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's what I'm very proud of with the show is I think like the shows as a whole are. Like the best version of the show, I think the whole process is very collaborative, and I can't imagine doing like that. Some of that is out of insecurity, being like, no, I'm not funny enough on my own. Like I need like Daly and Mulaney and Chelsea and Jenny Slate and Levenstein and Kreisel and the editors and all the writers that we have. Like I can't imagine like I'm too insecure with my own product to put that out. You know what I mean? Like, and also like I need to be a human being. I need other people to have responsibility and ownership over this so that it gets done. Cause I can't imagine being the only person who's like, no, this, we need to get, you know what I mean? Like that seems like a nightmare to me to be like a sole voice.
This didn't work. Well, you said.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
No,
yeah.
You forced your thing.
Yeah,
I did. No way.
Yeah,
I did do that. Yeah,
oh, that's right. I said it wasn't. Yeah, you had to use my.
Yeah.
Still, but
I said
still,
this
you let me.
Yeah.
What?
It's still your fault somehow, right? Right?
Yeah.
So it's that. To me, it's the collaboration that makes it like a real fun, also a really fun thing to do. Like,
yeah.
Where you're like, you know, we were shooting this teaser episode that's online. All the episodes, by the way, are online. If you haven't seen season one, it's all on ComedyCentral.com and Hulu. But there's a teaser episode that we made like sort of bridging season one and season two. And it was like and I had a bunch of the folks. One of the differences between season one and season two is like we have a bunch of interviews, sort of on the fly interviews with whoever the guest stars were, because like because we were talking about it with your show as well, that Comedy Central wants to like to see the behind the scenes, and like same with Midnight, where it's like they want to see all of us like playing around with each other, and it makes sense because it's like some of the fun stuff is the off the cuff like mess around stuff, and so I had like Chelsea, Jenny Slate, Daly, and Manzoukas all there, and we were all just sort of like yapping away as like interstitial stuff, and I was like, God, this is so fucking cool that it's like me with my friends, like truly my friends who I think are so funny, and then we're all gonna get in here and like talk about the show we made and talk about the show that's coming. It's like it's so crazy that we get to do it, and it's so fun. It was a real moment of like, oh, this is done, and now we'll make more. But you know, like a brief starting to like look back on it, like, God, we're so lucky that we get to that this is happening.
Yeah, it's
a long
pretty
way from Oh Hello.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy, and yet the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
And also, I have to hugely apologize to you because you gave us a video for At Midnight, and we couldn't air it.
Oh, you couldn't?
We couldn't air it because we in the first run of the show, we were like, oh, one way that will really be able to get our friends on who can't actually be there for whatever reason is we'll just get them to do something on their iPhone on their iChat camera. So we shot a bunch of them and we started showing them, and we realized, like, I guess we were thinking the way the internet works, like, oh, you could just put this on YouTube and it would make sense. But what we were finding is we would show these like iChat or iPhone videos, and because people weren't mic'd properly, the live audience could never hear what they were saying. And so we have this one screen that's just to the left of the podium that was just for like, oh, these are celebrity cameo videos. Yeah. And we had to stop. The only other one we did is we actually sent a camera crew to Nick Offerman because we're like, we have to mic these people from now
on.
That's
so interesting. So, that takes some of the charm out of it then, right?
Well, a little bit. But I mean, in theory, you think it might. But in actuality, like the iChat kind of iPhone cameras, they really just don't look as, like, the rest of the television show is produced.
Right.
And that part in the audio is like, you're back here and you can't.
Yeah. So
it was a huge bummer. So I'm sorry you wasted your time doing that. But I really, really, really want you to come do.
I would like to.
Come be on the show or come.
Yeah, I would like to. And it's very exciting to watch.
You'll crush. You'll fucking destroy.
Yeah, it is fun. It's fun to watch something like that sort of take hold and work. And again, I go back to, like, you got to do something for the first time. It's like there are the things like that that you just don't know in season one.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this thing that we like love the idea of in practice just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I felt that with Kroll Show with season one to season two. You're just like, oh, like we were trying to do like, it's going to be super dense. And it's the show's still very dense, but it was like, we'll do one-off sketches, and then we'll do these longer pieces, and we'll do da-da-da-da. And like we watched it. You know, starting to air, and you're like, oh, like that doesn't work right. And now, like, and you get to go do season two, and you're like, oh, now, you know, like, let's have more, like, less of these faster sketches and take that time and, like, have me talk to, like, you know, Craig Robinson or Chelsea or Zach or whoever the guest, you know, the guest star was. And those moments sort of took that place, and I think makes the show more of a fun hole to watch, but you just don't know. It's like you guys are going to do your show. You just don't know.
That's one of my favorite things, though. As long as you're given the opportunity to apply the knowledge that you've gained,
yes.
But I love it, it's for me. It's the equivalent of taking apart a toaster and figuring out how it works.
Yeah,
you know, it's okay, great. Well, it sucked that we had to lose that thing, but amazing that we now. Because I'm sure you've like kind of like what you were saying. There's probably stuff that came up that you never ever would have had any idea. Like, oh, that's the thing that's going to work. Yeah. Oh my god! And then you can focus on that.
Yeah, and then you over focus on it, and then people don't like it anymore.
It's too thinky.
Yeah, it's like sticking a fork in a toaster. Get electric. But I do think, for me, it's a process of elimination, and it's like for me, it's like putting the puzzle together. That's the fun part of, especially in the edit, which I was always like scared of. Was always like, well, the edit is where I lose power because like I can control the writing, I control what I say on set, but once we get into editing, like I'm just there. You know what I mean? Yeah. But then now I'm like, no, the edit is another piece of that puzzle where you can just keep working it.
Yeah. So that's 10. It's running for 10 weeks. Starting on the 14th. And then are you on the...
11 weeks, actually.
11 weeks.
Yeah.
Are you performing anywhere anytime soon?
I was doing the road in November, December. I'm going to be in New York, actually, while the show comes out, making a movie that I have been put together for like a couple of years ago. It's been a long process, but that is me and Rose Byrne and Bobby Cannavale.
Wow, nice.
And it's sort of like a dramedy that I've been sort of putting.
Nice.
Yeah. That's so great. Yeah. So I'm really. That's what I'll be doing while the show comes out, and then we'll come back. I'll come back from there and start writing Kroll Show season 3.
Hey. Holy shit!
So hopefully we'll get. It's script order. We haven't been, you know, picked up officially, but so we'll start writing it and see what happens.
That's great.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, it's good to see you, Nick.
It's good to thank you for having me. I always enjoy being here.
Please come back whenever you want.
This
please
sounds
come,
like a fake conversation.
Please come do the At Midnight program.
Yeah, I would love to.
No one's ever said like as many times as people have said we started. No one's been like, "Have we finished?
Are we finished?
Are we done?
Is this done?
Are we finished now?
Can I be myself now?
Can I be?
Yeah. Ugh, can you believe I was saying all that shit about being insecure? What a fucking joke!
Sounded like a real pussy there, Nick.
Yeah. Like, and I said I wanted to make women feel comfortable in sex scenes. I'm a monster.
Yeah. I just binocled my dick.
Oh, hey. Yeah,
it stings.
Yeah. Oh, it really hurts. Why did I do that?
Why did I do that?
Cinnamon.
Dick flavored? Dick flavored?
Yeah, I don't know why they sold it either. Anyway, which one?
Yeah.
You just reminded me that I just saw an ad from the producers of Jersey Shore have essentially done Jersey Shore in the South with rednecks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's, look, I get it. I don't want to begrudge people working, and I'm sure if someone, you know, someone went to them and was like, can you please do a redneck version of this? Mm-hmm. And they were like, sure, we did that well, we'll do it. Mm-hmm. But the cookie cutterness of it is so like, the situation is called Daddy, and he's fucking shirtless and ripped, but he has really? A crazy nickname, oh, and it just like, come on.
Yeah, it's kind of
try to branch out.
It's done until we watch
try
it.
Try to branch out.
Oh my God, did you see the party down south?
Yeah.
So fucking amazing.
Have you read Daddy's book? It's really, really funny. It's like, it seems like it'd be dumb, but it's really
ironically,
good.
It's about moms.
Yeah.
All right.
All righty.
Get out.
All right, thank you.
Get out!
Guys,
these headphones.
Man,
buddy.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 65th National Finals of Distinguished Young Women.
Every year, one girl from every state leaves her family, her whole life behind, for 2 weeks, and spends each day training, practicing, preparing. Because to win this competition, she needs to wow a panel of judges with her academic record, her athletic ability, her speaking skills, and a show-stopping talent.
I met her and I was like, she's gonna win.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
When I sing that song about being a black woman in America, there's gonna be backlash about that.
Oh, I'm just so happy. So happy.
I don't wanna see them. I don't wanna talk to them.
And then we stayed with them for the next year, unpacking just what happened those 2 weeks in Mobile. I'm Shimol Yai, and from Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.